Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back tonight to Republic News Radio 101, We the People. And tonight we're hosting the great Dan Happel, the Connecting the Dots radio show. And we also have one of the greatest producers, Dale Bigtree, is joining us as well. Also has TV shows, movies, and his own radio out there in the world, The High Wire. Gentlemen, it's a great, great honor to be with you tonight.
Well, thank you, Gator. I really appreciate the opportunity to bring Dale Bigtree onto our network, because this gentleman has done a tremendous service to the American people. And I will lead into starting this show with just kind of a description of where we're going to go with this show tonight. It really is a special program. We're covering the movie Vaxxed, and it really promises, that movie promises to blow the lid off the CDC cover-up of research exposing the direct link between the early childhood infant vaccine for measles, mumps, and rubella. It's an MMR vaccine, and the exponential increase in early childhood autism. Movie producer and general medical journalist Dale Bigtree, who has a daytime blockbuster news program called The Doctors. He will explain the intellectual journey that he and the movie's director, Dr. Andy Wakefield, took in the process of making this movie. It's just amazing when you realize how government has been really colluding with the big pharma companies on these vaccines, and money has been greasing the wheel. And it's the money pump that's been filling the swamp in Washington, D.C., and I certainly hope that President Trump has the ability to start draining that swamp. So with that, I want to mention that Dale Bigtree has had one of the best Emmy-winning daytime television programs called The Doctors. It's been on the air for quite a long time, and he has won a number of Emmys with that. And he also, I think, should be winning, although I'm not going to hold my breath, Dale, but I think you should be winning a Nobel Prize for exposing this horrible, really, program that the CDC has been covering up. So with that, I want to welcome you to the show, and I'd love for you to start talking about how you got involved in this whole program in the very beginning.
Well, Dan, first of all, I want to thank you for having me. I don't know if I live up to everything you've said about me, but I do. I do appreciate your references. This is a very important issue, vaccine safety. I think it's one of the most controversial issues in this country, if not the world. It shouldn't be controversial. We should never be afraid to question science and ask to see the evidence of statements made. But this is in a very specific type of discussion. It's one that has been controlled by the pharmaceutical industry and our networks and our television and all the media that have been co-opted by that industry to make it terrifying for anybody to ask really simple questions. Are vaccines safe? Are they effective? And how have we proven that? So I have had the opportunity to really spend the last 3 years as a medical journalist investigating nothing except that one question. Are vaccines safe, and how have we proven they're safe if we're going to make that statement medically? As you pointed out, I was a producer on the daytime talks of The Doctors. That was a CBS television show. I was nominated for multiple Emmys, but I want to clear up, I've only won one so far, which was a great honor. I won an Emmy Award on that
talk
show. I always want to say that working on a show like The Doctors was a great privilege. It was a great show. And my job as a producer was to celebrate medicine, to celebrate the best doctors in the world, to celebrate new cutting-edge techniques that were, or maybe surgeries that were finding ways to achieve the same result without being as abusive to the body. Those are the types of subjects we would cover. I've had the opportunity to scrub in, as they say, into ORs. I've been with cameras inside of surgery rooms hundreds of times with that show and that opportunity. I've seen medical doctors working miracles right before my eyes in front of the camera, and I was lucky enough to be a part of a television show that turned that into a form of entertainment. It was a great experience. I say that because a lot of times the discussion we're about to get into, people will try to say I'm anti-science or I'm anti-doctors. And I will tell you, I'm a person that simply, I have to be passionate about what I'm doing or I don't do it. And I was passionate when I did that show. And I'm passionate about the great beauty that medicine can bring to our lives. But this story is a different one. And it's one that caught me somewhat by surprise. And that was while I was working on the doctors. I was tipped off on a story about a whistleblower at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, a man named Dr. William Thompson, who the way it went, I was sitting in my office. I got a call from an inside source, a doctor I had done a story with the year earlier. And when I was working with that doctor on a very controversial story, he said, "You may not want to have me on your show." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Well, because I'm considered a quack." And I was like, "What do you mean? This story is so important we're about to do." He's like, "I know, but if you look online, I'm one of these doctors that actually believes that vaccines cause autism." And I said to him, "Oh, well, you know, I don't write off any story. I don't shut the door on any story. And that doesn't scare me away." And we continued to work on a totally different story that he was involved with. But I said to him, I said, "Look, the consensus in medicine is that vaccines are safe and effective. And certainly the statement we officially make on this show, the doctors, is that vaccines are safe and effective. So I can't really go near that story unless something big happens, unless there's something that changes in this issue. And if something big happens, since you're obviously a doctor on the forefront, let me know." Well, that's exactly what he did a year later. And he called me and he said, "You know, Del, remember we had that conversation about vaccines and autism?" I said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, and you said something big would have to happen before you would be interested in looking into the story." I said, "That's right." He said, "Well, something big is about to happen. We have a top scientist at the CDC that is going to come forward in 2 weeks and let the world know that they've committed scientific fraud at the most important health agency in the world, the CDC, specifically on the MMR, the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, and the study that looked at autism in early 2000 to 2004. And he's going to tell the world that they know that vaccines cause autism and they've hid it from the public." And I said, "I appreciate you tipping me off. I wanted to do that story on the doctors, but very early on, my producers were not interested." And I wasn't surprised. I mean, you have to understand, they have a medical talk show. We do a lot of pharmaceutical, we're funded by a lot of pharmaceutical commercials and things like that. And we also were very good friends with the CDC, who would allow our show to come in and behind the scenes when there was an outbreak of flu or something like that. No one wanted to hurt those relationships. And, you know, that's who I work for. There's nothing I can say about that. But to myself, I thought, well, that's okay, because in 2 weeks, if this guy is for real and he really comes forward, this is going to be the biggest medical story in the world. Maybe one of the biggest medical stories of all times, because this vaccine issue, we've really been told it's just perfectly safe and anyone that questions it's crazy. If a top scientist comes forward, there's no bigger story in the world. Well, 2 weeks later, the story did break. And I heard the words of this whistleblower that had been recorded saying things like, "We manipulated data. We threw, the data in the garbage can. Every time I see a child with autism, I feel guilty because I know what we did. I can't believe what we did." And that came out and nobody covered it, Dan. Not Fox News, not MSNBC, not CNN, nobody, not NPR, nobody, not New York Times, not Washington Post, not LA Times. Nobody in media thought that this was a story worth covering. And that began a journey I could have never expected, because in that moment, Dan, I realized something is going on that is much bigger than I ever realized. And I want to be clear because we all know that we've left sort of fair and balanced news that used to be in the 1940s and 50s and Edward R. Murrow and all these great journalists. The times have changed. We know that media makes money now. It has advertisers, and it has to, you know, to be a success, it has to have people tune in. So it's very sensational. And I've accepted that, and I think we all have. But I thought, certainly, if you come out with a headline like top CDC scientists claim scientific fraud, they know vaccines cause autism, that episode of that show or that headline on any newspaper would be the top-selling, most viewed episode or paper in at least 10 years, if not in history. And when nobody covers that story, or on the other hand, they decide to run the headline, you know, CDC out of control, crazy lunatics, you know, running it, scientists comes forward with crazy idea that vaccines cause autism. Either way, there was a story there. Yeah, and when they don't tell any of those stories, when it's totally silent and crickets, something is wrong. And that's what I've been investigating ever since.
There's some background noise on this call. I'm not sure where it's coming from, but we need to, if someone has an open mic or please mute your phone if you're not part of this conversation. Dale, I wanted to mention the fact, and you mentioned this when you were in Bozeman, you've always been a pretty liberal guy and pretty open-minded about and somewhat concerned about the idea that there are conspiracies out there. And so you came at this whole MMR vaccine thing with a very skeptical attitude, and you were going to make sure that whatever you put on film was very, very well documented and that it was absolutely correct. And I believe you've done that, not only done that, but I think it was also a really eye-opening experience for you because it did show that big pharma and that big money is really controlling an awful lot of our medical field and certainly things like Congress and the CDC.
Well, let me be clear that when a journalist like myself does a story like this, you're not thorough just because you have to be thorough. I was thorough because I knew that to venture into a documentary on vaccines and have a scientist saying that vaccines are causing autism would probably be the end of my career, would probably certainly be challenged. This was something that nobody that has ever stepped into, and I've seen them before. I've seen the stories. I've seen Cheryl Atkinson, who was a CBS reporter, ventured into this discussion and was fired for this and other stories like it. You're aware of the world. You've seen doctors lose their licenses for questioning autism, vaccines and the connection to autism. So it wasn't lost on me that if I was going to do this story, it better be immaculate, or there was no point in sacrificing my career to do it. So I would say that it was self-preservation, ultimately, that made me as thorough as I was going to be. On the other hand, I suppose there's journalists that might have walked away from the story because it was that dangerous. I'm not wired that way. I'm intrigued. I think there's a lot of journalists out there that remembered watching Woodward and Bernstein and the Watergate situation and thought to themselves, geez, if I could only break a story like that someday. So that's in our bloodstream as a journalist. I followed through on that. But you're right. I made sure that this was an immaculate story, at least to the best of our ability to make sure that it was true before I got involved. And what you will see in VAX are multiple scientists and multiple families that have been affected by this, including the words of one of our top scientists who is now a whistleblower, Dr. William Thompson. And I believe the movie is so compelling that it really, it's very, very hard. And I've almost met nobody that has watched that movie and not been affected by it. And I mean, I've done Q&As at theaters where doctors have walked up and literally with veins popping out in their neck and virtually slobbering, screaming at me how angry they were and the danger I was causing for children and how I was killing children for having been a part of a film like this. That has happened. I'm not making that up. Multiple times, and I always say to those people, I just want to thank you for coming to watch the film because I know this is outside of your wheelhouse, and many of the doctors and people in your community won't even let themselves watch it. I want to thank you for being here. Usually they would say, I'm just here to do my research because I'm going to prove you wrong. And virtually every time, and I honestly can't remember a time where this didn't happen, but I'm sure it might have, so I don't want to be overstating it. But I can't tell you how many times that person that was screaming at me, that doctor, that scientist, came out after the film, oftentimes in tears, and said, my God, I had no idea. I didn't know. And now I look back and I ask myself, how many children's lives have I personally destroyed? I'll never forget one pediatrician that said to me, Del, I'm going to have to get a therapist to work through the guilt I am feeling right now in the damage I might have done when all I ever wanted to do was help children, and now I see that is not what I have done. That's what that movie does, and we can sit here and we're going to talk about it, Dan, but people have to see it. You can listen to what we're going to say, but that movie, and I'm not saying this because I made it, it's one of those creative experiences where that made itself. There was something, it was a story that had to be told, and those of us involved in it are in awe of that movie as those that see it. It's hard to lay claim to something that I think, it's sort of like sculptors say, a great sculpture was always in that stone. All I did was remove the excess stone out of the way. That's what I think Vaxxed is. I don't claim that I did it. I think it made itself. It was a story that had to be told, and it is so powerful and moving. It really does change minds and changes lives, and that's why it has come under such attack. Hospitals telling their staff, you are not allowed to watch Vaxxed. Nurses come to me saying, my doctor told me I'm not allowed to see this movie. Of course, that only made me more curious. And you have to ask yourself, if the medical community was so confident in its approach and its ideas, wouldn't it say the opposite? Wouldn't you tell your staff, you should really go see this stupid movie Vaxxed because people are getting the wrong impression and we're going to get a lot of questions about it. They're easy questions to refute. So go see it so you're better equipped to understand the questions that are coming your way. You wouldn't say, don't ever let your eyes set upon this film. That is fear. That is terror. That says to me this industry knows it has a problem and is trying to blind its own staff and its own doctors and its own nurses. And that's what we're up against right now. Unfortunately, these unfortunate pediatricians and nurses that have believed they were doing the right thing are now given no tools. They were never told how a vaccine works. They don't understand how the testing was faked or how it wasn't done at all. And now they're left with no argument in a world that is turning on them. Every day, more and more and more people are starting to question vaccines because we are showing them the real science. And it is getting scary out there for the medical community.
I think you're absolutely on the money there. And we've run into that in other fields like climate change and some of the other things where rather than argue the facts, which that's what science is. It's to test a theory and test an idea over and over and over again. And every time, if you end up with a different result, you realize that your science is not good. And that's exactly what you're trying to do with this movie, is show what the scientific facts are and get that before the American public. And I know that you scared the BGs out of the medical community. And incidentally, a big part of the people that were at that program that you did in Bozeman were RNs, LPNs, and people in the medical fields that were sponsoring you being there to do that show.
So I really appreciate the fact that there are beginning to be more and more of the medical community that are owning up to what you're trying to really show in a way that makes them aware and makes them think about what they're doing.
Yeah, it's and I, you know, my hat is off to those doctors that are stepping up, and it's very hard to do. It's very hard to admit that the very thing you thought was your life's purpose and was a greater good is actually perhaps the opposite is true. It takes a special kind of person. We get angry that people don't do that more often, but you and I both know we're not wired that way. We're not wired to challenge ourselves. We're not wired to allow ourselves to find out that we've made a major mistake. Our human preservation of ourselves and our ideals and our ideas are one of our greatest strengths. It's also one of our greatest weaknesses. And you're right. I was a progressive liberal that really believed in the work that I was doing, and I was very vocal in politics that way. This issue has changed that for me. I have not landed on a side, except that I say I'm politically marooned at the moment, because I don't believe this political system. I can't find a party that really truly is representing the people in total. And maybe I have two specific requests now of the people that represent me. But I will say that this issue has taken me down a rabbit hole that's made me understand other issues I've been watching, some of which I supported and some which I've always been against. But when you follow something and you see the pattern with which your government operates with industry and colludes or is infiltrated by the industries, the only reason I think a government is really necessary is to protect us from large industry and poisoning us and hurting us. Everything else, then we should be free. The individual should be free. And that's what I thought liberal meant. I thought there was liberty in liberal. And I believe there once was. I believe when my parents,
oh, sure,
were 60s hippies, were marching, they were marching for freedom. They were marching for the ability to say we don't want to go to unnecessary wars. They were marching for freedom of education. That's what I was raised with. That is no longer the case. This is an oppressive government now. It's an oppressive liberal mindset that believes that the state, the government, knows best and therefore needs to make as many laws as absolutely possible to run our lives, not what our founding fathers dreamed, which was a political system that uses as few laws as possible to allow us to walk amongst each other. And this issue has brought that to light for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dale, I have to tell you, you're following a path that very many of us have been down that same path, because I like you. Well, I started my life as a so-called liberal, and now I realize I'm probably closer to libertarian than anything else, because I think government should be there only to protect our freedoms. And if it does anything beyond that, it's exceeding what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, I mean, I looked at it now. I've become such a fan of our founding fathers and looking at what almost seems like a divine intervention when we look at our Constitution and Declaration, the foresight that I think they had. But what they left us and said to us was, we can't find a political system that is perfect, but what we're giving you is the best we could find. But they warned us, any government, any system like this is a necessary evil, that this can turn into a monster that will turn on you if you give it too much power, if you feed it too much, and certainly if you let your fear give it too much energy. To protect your safety, you start writing more laws. You will have, as Ben Franklin said, neither safety, or freedom. You will
freedom.
Take it all away from yourself. And I think that's what I think about a lot now. We're kind of getting off the topic, but just here in California where I live, we passed some of the worst vaccine laws known to man. I remember last year I saw that they were trying to create a bill to say that each senator and congressman was going to be limited to 40 laws or 40 bills per legislator per legislative season. And it just hit me that 40 laws or 40 bills per legislator in California, like hundreds, of legislators and 40 bills apiece. And I just thought, are you telling me since 1776 until today, we haven't written enough laws to walk amongst each other that we need 40 apiece by the hundreds? And I'm sure across the states, the 50 states, there are 10,000, hundreds of thousands, millions of laws that still need to be written so that we can figure out how to walk amongst each other. I mean, it's really insane. It's totally
it really
insane.
Is. Yeah, it is. And I know that in 2015, that's the last year that I heard the numbers from, the Library of Congress filled 35 feet of shelving with all the new regulations and bills. And incidentally, most of those regulations were created by unelected bureaucrats working in some federal agency, and their laws have the effect of some of them have criminal charges if you if you break those laws, and yet it never even got close to the legislature. So that's the kind of thing that we're creating in our country. I don't want to get too far off the subject here, because we are so – you have hit on such a wonderful subject to be talking about. First of all, let's talk about autism, and let's talk about the fact that it was virtually unknown 80 years ago, 70 years ago. And as a result of all the – let's say the experimentation and all the new chemicals introduced into our environment, and then finally some of the vaccines, we've gone from non-existent to, I understand it's 1 in 50 children now that have developed autism.
There's several different ways that is measured. The CDC uses two different methods. One method gives us the number of 1 in 59. Another one, which is a polling system, gives us 1 in 36 children being diagnosed with autism. I think the most important number to look at comes out of the state of New Jersey, because New Jersey is the only state where physicians are mandated to record their autistic patients, and in that state we're at 1 in 32. I believe that's probably more accurate. We're somewhere around 1 in 32 children being diagnosed with autism now in America, and boys are affected at almost four times the rate. So that means that boys are being diagnosed somewhere in the neighborhood of 1 in 18 to 1 in 20 or 22. Horrific, terrifying numbers when you think about a disease or an illness or whatever you want to call it, an ailment that's leaving adults in diapers, unable to communicate, varying levels of damage. We are looking at maybe what will be the most costly epidemic, both financially and to American exceptionalism. We're looking at its current increase, and as you pointed out, we like to say we were at about 1 in 10,000 in the 1970s or 80s being diagnosed with autism. Now, if we're at 1 in 32, there's a great scientist in our film, Vax, Stephanie Senep, who is an MIT mathematician, physicist. I mean, she's got more letters behind her name than anyone I've ever met. And she simply calculated the rate of increase of autism from the 1970s and 80s till now. And what she graphed out and said, if we continue on the current rate of increase, we will be diagnosing 1 in 2 children with autism by 2032. That's it. 50% of our children will be autistic. That means that's the end of a standing army. That means if you don't have autism, then you will be taking care of someone who does. A lifelong illness, an inability to go to college for most, an inability to have a productive life or live on your own. That's the end of the standing army. That may be the end of being able to mount a standing Starbucks. We can't let that happen.
No, you're right. We can't let that happen. And the social cost as well as the financial cost of one in two male members of society having autism, we would basically end our functioning society as such, and the cost would be so enormous that I don't think they could be borne by any normal society.
I'm not sure we can, I don't know if we can afford the cost we're already at. At one in 32 children, that means we're going to have, you know, when my child who's 9 years old grows up to be in his 20s, his generation will have somewhere between 5 and 10 million autistic adults that came along with him. Every one of those adults, we know that the CDC says in their own numbers, it costs roughly, you know, $3 million to raise a child with autism through adulthood. Well, now take 3 to 10 million people with autism and multiply that by $3 million. We are talking about trillions of dollars in debt to a disease, and so our insurance programs are going to collapse. In fact, right now, many insurance companies are trying to pass laws that they don't have to pay for autism because they already can't afford that burden. And then imagine trillions of dollars in debt to a diseased, ill population. How are we going to survive that? We will never get to one and two before the destruction sets in. We're already, you know, spending money beyond what we know how to handle. And this epidemic has really only gotten started. So the ramifications are really mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm. They are. And Dr. Seneff indicated with her graph that one in two would be by the year 2030. So that's only 12 years away. This is such an exponential curve that we've got to turn this around immediately. And it's such a simple process to turn it around, because what Dr. Wakefield had indicated, he felt that you could do it by just separating those vaccines and making each vaccine individual and doing them separated by a fairly short period of time and accomplish the same thing, but in a way that's safe for these infants, for these young children.
Yeah, that was really, that's his theory. I'll tell you, in the last 3 years of working on this, and this is something that I'm not sure that that's true anymore. I'm not sure. I think we have too many vaccines altogether, and we have the science that Andy wanted to do to really investigate this. He was stopped because they took his license away. He's one of the greatest scientific minds I think we've ever had in the world, but he wasn't allowed to continue that science. And so what we're left with were the theories that he was beginning. But now, just in the last few years, we have brilliant scientists, one in British Columbia named Dr. Chris Shaw. People can look him up. A brilliant man who's been investigating aluminum. That's been his major focus, aluminum. And now he's looking at aluminum vaccines. It's been dissecting human brains. A man named Dr. Chris Exley in England. A great scientist in France, Roman Girardi, and a spectacular new talent coming out of China, a man named Dr. Yao. All of these scientists are looking at vaccines, and what they're saying is there is no safe vaccine, that they are causing neurological development disorders in any level that are being given to our children. They're doing mouse studies, monkey studies, every animal study, which is the best studies you can do because you can't test on human beings. And every one of these brilliant scientists is now showing the mechanism by which vaccines can cause not only autism, but multiple sclerosis, diabetes, we believe ADD, ADHD, all of the rise in childhood cancers. Another brilliant doctor out of Seattle, Washington, named Teresa Deischer. I could go on. But when people tell you that the science has been settled and scientists all agree that vaccines are safe, that is no longer true. There are, you know, so many scientists and a growing body of brilliant well-published, documented science all over the world now showing us that we have been lied to, that the tobacco science that was paid by the pharmaceutical industry was a total hoax and a lie, and now really great scientists are uncovering what so many parents have told us for years. My child got a vaccine. Right after that vaccine, prior to it, they were walking, they were talking, they had hit all the developmental milestones. Right after the vaccine, they regressed into autism, or they got seizures for their entire life, or they got diabetes, or, you know, could no longer focus in a classroom. All of these stories now, scientists are showing us the mechanism by which that happens. This is a very exciting time for science, because now we are actually at the tools and the ability to figure out why those parents' story was true. So what I want to tell people, Vaxxed is about one cover-up and one fraud around the MMR vaccine. But if you see the interviews I'm doing on my weekly talk show, The High Wire, and the scientists we're talking to, you will see that the history, when we look back at history, we are going to look at this science of vaccines and say, my God, how did we allow that to happen to us? And how did we allow pharma to lie and control our government agencies and force a product upon us that was clearly destroying the autoimmune system of our children and also the neurological development of our kids? I am so confident now that history, that we are on the right side of history, those that are questioning this, that I know we win. History has to tell the truth. The truth does prevail. The only question left, Dan, is how many more children will have to have their lives destroyed before the body of American science, of our governmental science bodies that are lying to us, how long can they continue to lie to us before, and how many children will be lost before we finally admit the truth?
I absolutely agree with that. Someone has got an open mic on this line, and I wish that mute that mic, because we're getting all kinds of background noise, paper shuffling and background noise. So please mute that mic if you would, please. I want to talk about the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, because that is such an important part of what you're talking about. The fact that these pharmaceutical companies are not held by the same standards for vaccines that they are for other types of prescription medicine. Would you talk about what that act did and how it opened the doors for all these problems?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. The 1986 Vaccine Injury Compensation Act took away liability from the pharmaceutical industry on vaccines. You cannot, just to be put as plain as possible, you cannot sue a vaccine maker for injury to you or your child, for death, seizures, nothing. You cannot sue them at all. You can't sue the doctor that injected it. You can't sue the hospital where it happened or the Walmart that gave you the flu shot. Everybody is totally indemnified from any responsibility when it comes to vaccine injury. It's not only unlike any other drug that the pharmaceutical industry is involved with, because those you can sue. It's not like any other product in this country. There's not another product that is indemnified or has no liability in that way. Imagine a car company that you cannot sue if the airbag fails or the brakes fail. We would never see the recall of a million Toyotas when the airbags failed. We would never see a recall of those car seats that didn't do the job to protect a baby. We'd never see the recall of, remember, Vioxx. Vioxx was a prescription drug that caused somewhere between 65,000 and a half a million heart attacks before they were taken to court. That was Merck that made that product, Vioxx. And in those court documents and in that case, we found internal emails where the heads of Merck were telling the salespeople, don't worry about these doctors that are questioning the safety of Vioxx or whether they're causing heart attacks. We will hunt them down and destroy them where they live. That came out in court. That's why it's really important to be able to sue so that you can see those internal documents. If anybody has been watching the television, we just saw this with the Monsanto case, which is glyphosate. They just had to pay $290 million to one guy because the herbicide that he used, that everybody's using called Roundup, causes non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. There's now thousands of cases lined up, but because they could sue, we had internal documents where they're admitting to each other in emails, we know this thing is not safe. We know it causes cancer, but we can't tell the people. You can only get those internal emails and documents if you can sue. So since you can't sue the pharmaceutical industry for a vaccine, we don't have any of that information. That happened in 1986 because, now think about this, there were so many lawsuits against vaccines, specifically the diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis vaccine was killing children and paralyzing children at such alarming rates that the industry found itself in a position where it was starting to be difficult to make money. Think about the pharmaceutical industry not being able to make money. Think about how many people were using vaccines, and the lawsuits were outnumbering and out, you know, costing them more. And so what they did was blackmailed Ronald Reagan and our government. And they said, well, instead of making our product better, here's what we're going to tell you. We're going to stop making all vaccines unless you protect us from liability. Now, Ronald Reagan hated this idea. And I was not, by the way, I wasn't raised to be a fan of Ronald Reagan. So I'm going to remind everybody, I was a progressive liberal, but these are the types of things that start making you think. He said, this is a terrible idea. Why would we take away the only real market incentive there is to evolve a product that is clearly, under so many lawsuits, this product must be no good? And the Congress was weighing in and having similar issues. But, of course, pharma has always been a large lobby. It's now the number one most powerful lobby in America. And they pushed this law through. And so they got the liability they wanted. And in that moment, we were getting 10 vaccines. We're giving 10 vaccines to our children by the time they were 18. Suddenly, it became a gold rush for vaccine makers. Now, all of a sudden, imagine, you cannot be sued at all. So that means I don't need to do any more safety tests. Because if it hurts somebody, no one can get to me. And all of a sudden, every vaccine in trials suddenly started just being put right into our children's schedule. And now in 2017, instead of the 10 vaccines I would have gotten as a kid, our children are getting 72 shots of 16 different vaccines by the time they're 18. And when you track that meteoric explosion in the amount of vaccines, you also see the health of our children declining at the same exact rate. Just to give you a few of the numbers, in the 1980s, before the 86 Act, we had a 12.8% rate of chronic illness in our children. So that includes autoimmune diseases and neurological disorders. Now, when you track that increase in vaccine in 2017, now 54% of America's children have a chronic illness they will have the rest of their lives. One in six has a speech delay. Autism exploding to one in 36 that we've talked about. Diabetes like nothing we've ever seen. ADD, ADHD. Our special needs classes have exploded. They're taking all the money out of our school system. Sports programs are disappearing. Music programs are disappearing only so that we can pay for this gigantic special needs class that just keeps growing exponentially. So when people say to me, you know, why are you fighting this vaccine issue? I say there would be no point in me discussing this as a medical journalist if we had the healthiest children we'd ever seen, if we had the healthiest children in the world. But we don't, Dan. We don't. We have, I'm going to rattle off a couple more numbers. In America, these are all provable facts written by CBS and written by the CDC and different reputable sources. I never quote anything except published journals. Here it is. More babies die on the first day of life in America than every other industrialized nation combined. More babies die on the first day of life. We're one of the only ones that give a hepatitis B vaccine on the first day of life, a sexually transmitted disease like AIDS that you cannot come in contact with unless you're sharing heroin needles or sleeping with prostitutes. I don't know how you plan on raising your babies, but I don't see the need for that for my baby for a really long time and hopefully never. So that's an insane vaccine, and babies are dying because of it. In nations that aren't giving it, their babies aren't dying on day one. Next stat, more likely to die in your first day of life, in your first year of life in America than every other industrialized nation. It was just put out in a study about 3 or 4 weeks ago. You are 70% more likely to die before reaching 18 years old in America than the 20 other richest nations in the world. Those stats are unbelievable. We are doing something wrong. And as a producer from the Doctor's Television Show, I'm asking you, those people that fought the Affordable Care Act, why did we fight having a nationalized, socialized medical program? Because we have the best doctors in the world, do we not? Do we not have the best hospitals in the world? Why are our babies dying at alarming rates worse than every other country that even has socialized medicine? Why are our kids dying in their young years? You have got to look at the only real difference. We're eating the same food. We're breathing the same air. Our water isn't more toxic than any other country. What are we doing differently? We are vaccinating our kids literally to death.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of those, there are states now where passing laws that are making vaccinations mandatory where people don't have the ability to opt their children out. Am I correct in that?
You're right. There's now 3 states. I live in one of them. California was the last state to try to actually pass a law taking away all exemptions. There are 47 other states, but the 3 you cannot have any exemption in really is California, West Virginia, and Mississippi. I actually think you're going to watch in the next year or so, because I've been doing a lot of work at it. We're going to see West Virginia, who just dropped a bunch of vaccines off of their kindergarten program about last week, an amazing change. They're going to start removing those laws, I believe. Mississippi is going to do the same. California really just jumped on this train last year when we had this crazy Senator Richard Pan who passed SB 277 taking rights away. But pharma is in your neighborhood. They are buying your next senator, your next congressman, and their goal is to force vaccinate not only your children. I really need people to hear this, because even if you think, well, I mean, I got vaccinated, and you can't wrap your head around the fact that the vaccines have exploded to, you know, 10, 50 times what you got. What I want you to know is pharma really doesn't care about the 3%, and that's what usually is of unvaccinated kids in America. That's not where the big dollars are. They're actually writing laws now, and you can look it up on Health and Human Services, our government website, to force vaccinate every adult in this country. And that is where this is all leading. And people have got to realize that, because think about it. You can make a lot of money on the 78 million children in America if you're forced vaccinating them like we are. You're going to make a little bit more if you can grab 3% more of those kids. But the moment you can get the government to force vaccinate 320 million Americans with those 16 growing to 20, thousands of vaccines in trials, thousands of vaccines away, when you can buy politicians and force those products into adults, you just took a $100-something billion industry a year and turned it into a $1 trillion industry overnight. That is what pharma is doing. That's what pharma is working on. And if you decide to remain asleep at the wheel in America, then you can't complain about the fact that you lost control of your body. And now you are being injected with products that are probably making you more sick, making you need more drugs, destroying the quality of life that you are appreciating right now. I want everyone listening to this program to ask themselves, do I feel like I'm pretty healthy right now? Do I think I need vaccines to get to the end of my life because I've been doing fine without them? Well, guess what? Your government officials are signing dotted lines right now to say, yes, you actually do need to be vaccinated. Something has gone off the rails, and I am trying to join, you know, bring together a bunch of people, and we are winning this, but we've got to stop it, and we've got to stand together and stop it now.
No, absolutely. And Del, one of the, you know, you talked about the libertarian ideal that,
as long as you're not hurting someone else, you should be free to live your life the way you want. And the fact is they're trying to claim that if you're not vaccinated, you're putting others at risk. And in fact, most of these vaccines are actually creating more, spreading disease more than they're actually resolving it. And so if you don't own your own body, if you don't have the freedom to choose what you put into your own body, you don't have freedom anymore.
Well, that's right. And you're pointing to, and I think it's a very important thing to bring up because it's the biggest argument they have that, okay, well, maybe, you know, vaccines don't work as well as we thought, but, you know, you have to be vaccinated to protect those children, those immunosuppressed children that cannot be vaccinated, or that baby at home that can't be vaccinated. The term we hear is herd immunity. We have got to hold on to herd immunity. This is the argument that the pharmaceutical industry has worked for years and years and years trying to develop because they didn't have an answer to the unvaccinated community that's always been here that was putting their kids in school. And the school would say, well, you know, we have a mandatory vaccine, law in this state. But the parents would say, yes, but there are also exemptions. And if your vaccines work so well, really, is my child a threat to your child? They didn't know how to answer that until they came up with herd immunity. I'm going to destroy this herd immunity myth right here because that's all it is. It's a total lie. And it's important that people understand this because it's the last hope. It's the last thing they're clinging to is a reason to vaccinate all children. So here it is. With measles, these are medical facts I'm about to give you. With measles, herd immunity can only be achieved if 95% of a community are vaccinated. Okay, 95%, that's the CDC's numbers. Now remember, herd immunity is actually a term that is stolen from natural immunity because what we learned over the years back in the 1940s and 50s is when a town had measles sweep through, it's a very infectious disease, but nobody really died. The death rate of measles, by the way, before the vaccine ever arrived in 1960, was 1 in 500,000 people died from measles. That's a non-event. More people get hit by cars or trip off the curbs, maybe even get struck by lightning. So we never needed this vaccine. But putting that aside, herd immunity meant if the whole town had gotten measles, then it would take 10 to 20 years before measles to be able to be an outbreak in that town again, because all of those people would have immunity for life. They were a wall against future infections. So new children, there wouldn't be enough of them to catch the disease. You can't have herd immunity with a vaccine because a vaccine doesn't last like natural immunity. It's not a lifelong immunity. It only lasts for 5 to maximum 10 years. So you have to keep vaccinating people in order to try and manage what nature did so well, which is herd immunity. Now, here's my point, and everyone listening, you know, I usually do this in an audience. People say, well, what about herd immunity? And I say this. We know that vaccines only last 5 to 10 years. We know that the measles, a part of the MMR vaccine, that only lasts 5 to 10 years, and we need 95% of people to be vaccinated. Now, all our health departments are telling us that by force vaccinating the children going into school, that we're making up that lack of vaccination, and that's achieving herd immunity. Except here's the problem. If I stand in any audience with a room full of adults, let's say 100 adults, and I do this all the time, Dan, I say, will you please stand up if you have not had your measles booster shot in the last 10 years as an adult? Do you know how many people stand up, Dan? Virtually everybody.
Everybody, sure.
Everybody. 99% of every audience I've ever asked that question stand up, and I say, you are not immune to measles. You, by the CDC's definition of immunity, need to get a booster shot, and you have not gotten it. So we are nowhere near 95%. We have never been near 95% because every adult driving their car listening to your show right now says, you know what, Del's right. I haven't had my measles booster in the last 10 years. Everyone sitting at home right now is thinking, geez, that's true. I haven't had my measles booster. So guess who is that infectious disease-filled, dangerous person? It's you. It's you if we're to listen to the CDC. And we're not at 95% we need to be at. We're about 50, 55% because only our kids are getting these vaccines and we are not. And I don't make that point, Dan, to say we need to now force vaccinate every adult, which is what they're going to use my talking point and tell you that's why you need to get vaccinated. But I want to ask you right now before they do that, where's the return of polio that they're telling us we're supposed to be terrified of? Where's the return of smallpox? Where's the giant measles outbreak that just wipes us all out and kills so many people? It's not happening, and we've never had herd immunity. So this entire thing is a concocted advertising scam to have us right away the control of our own bodies.
Mm-hmm. And with that, we have lost truly the life, liberty, and property that was guaranteed under our Constitution.
We gave it away. If we allow it,
we gave it away. We gave it away. Dale, we're almost out of time, but what I want to do is I want to give you a few minutes to be able to tell our listeners how they can support your work, and maybe if you could give a few websites or some information on how they can learn more about what you're talking about, and that is also how they can get the movie Vaxxed the best way and how they can support your work.
All right. Thank you, Dan. If you haven't seen Vaxxed, it's a must-see. And it's not just about vaccines. You'll actually find it fascinating. It's just like watching All the President's Men. You get to see the mechanism by which there's been a government cover-up that I think will make Watergate look like a child's game. When this all is exposed, you will see one of the greatest government cover-ups and one of the most dangerous things they've ever done. You can see and rent backs at almost any of the sites you would. If you're an Amazon Prime member, you can watch it for free. It will forever be free on Amazon Prime. You can also rent it there, iTunes. You can also go to Vaxxed, that's VAXXED.com. where we have also interviews of thousands of people around the country telling their true stories, but there's also a button there to buy the film. But you'll find it. If you look online, any search of Vaxxed will get you to how to buy it. It's a very important film. I've continued to do work with a nonprofit called Informed Consent Action Network. I just worked with Bobby Kennedy, who is my lawyer. We just won a lawsuit against Health and Human Services where they admitted that they did not do the job they were supposed to do to make vaccines safer that was mandated by that 86 law I told you about. For 30 years, they were supposed to be meeting with Congress every 2 years to describe how they were making vaccines safer. They didn't have a single meeting. We've been lied to. We've proven that. If you want to see the work I'm doing on that, then there's two ways to do that. Go to our nonprofit's website, which is icandecide.org. I have a white paper there that lays out all of our issues with the vaccine program. It's about 30 pages. It's condensed down as much as it can get. All of your information is there. That's where you want to start. And if you want to continue to hear the interviews and the information I bring on a weekly basis and what I've discovered every week, I have a internet talk show on Facebook and YouTube. We go live every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific time called The High Wire with Del Bigtree, H-I-G-H, Wire, with Del Bigtree. It's a great show. I have an amazing staff. And we now have done our 74th episode today, over 80 hours of information that I think you will find compelling. And then we also talk about all the other great groups that are working with us. But we're winning. This is the fastest growing movement in the world. A study just came out, more than 50% of people in Europe now believe or are questioning that connection between vaccines and autism. This is an issue everyone needs to be a part of. Our founding fathers never dreamed that we wouldn't have control of our own bodies. Let's stand up as our founding fathers did against oppression and against that armada of power that says it owns us, like the British Empire once did. Pharma does not own us. But the American people are going to have to stand once again for their freedom, or we will lose it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dale, I have to say this has been one of the more powerful and interesting interviews that we've had on Connecting the Dots. And
I thank you for all the work you're doing on the behalf of the American people, and I thank you for having the guts to stand up and talk and do the things that you're doing to try to end this travesty against our young people, against our society. And God bless you, my friend. You are exactly what this country needs at this time.
Gentlemen, I also would like to thank you, both of you, and commend you for your great patriotism to our country. Fascinating the show was, shocking as well. This needs to be brought to the people, we the people. And, sir, I promise you this, Republic News Radio 101, we're going to stand with you, sir, all we can, and get the word out there and show our support for your great mission. And it's a great honor tonight, gentlemen.
Well, thank you, Gator.
Goose pimples, you know, goose pimples all through my body tonight. One of the most amazing shows I've heard in many, many years. Sir, thank you for bringing this to light. I've heard these stories over the years from folks, friends of ours, even things we've gone through with our family. And you you just hit 10 home runs out of the ballpark. You're a great, great patriot, sir. Keep up the great work. Watch your six out there. We know what it's all about. There's so much corruption. It's just... It's hard to fathom.
Yes,
this,
it is.
This.
Well, Adele and Gator, I think thank you both, and I look forward for to the next time we get a chance to visit Dell. I hope you'll consider coming back on when we have an opportunity to talk about this more, and I will support you in any way that I can, and I hope that... I wish you good health, and thank you very much for being a guest on our show.
Thank you, Dan. I look forward to the next time, and I'll talk to you then.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank
God
you,
bless
sir.
You. God bless your family.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.